This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanasan and Noel Lim. First, a bit of a recap on how markets ended the week on Friday.
Well, looking at the Asian markets, it has been a green day on Friday. So the Nikkei was up 0.7%, Hang Seng was up 1.4%, Shanghai Composite up 1.2%, STI up 0.1% marginally, FVM KLCI up 0.3%.
And if we take a look over at US markets, which closed on Friday night, Saturday morning outside, the Dow was up 0.7%, the S&P 500 was up 0.3%, and the NASDAQ was in the red. I think the only one here so far over at the end of last week that was in the red. Down 0.1%.
So for more on what could move markets this week, we have on the line with us this morning Bernard Orr, Asia Pacific economist at Coface. Bernard, thank you so much for joining us today. So the S&P 500 managed to power to another record high on Friday. What are the macroeconomic indicators that are showing that a US equity rally might be sustainable in the long run?
Well, there are certainly macroeconomic reasons for the continued rise in the S&P 500 and the U.S. stock market in general. So for one, the U.S. economic outlook is now far more positive than, you know, 1 year or so ago. The COVID-19 situation is under control and over half of the U.S. population is vaccinated with at least one dose. So Coface expect the U.S. GDP to increase by over 6% this year, which will be the strongest growth in nearly 40 years if achieved. And in addition, you know, the long-term growth potential of the U.S. will be boosted if the proposed $1 trillion infrastructure plan is approved and passed into law. So this is really positive news for U.S. corporate earnings, which means that it's also good for U.S. equities. But of course, there are risks to further U.S. stock rally. First, inflation risks are becoming more prominent, and we saw that the U.S. Federal Reserve brought forward its rate hike expectations to 2023. Second, the U.S. stocks are getting more and more expensive, as measured by a sharp rise in that, you know, the matrix known as the price to earning ratio. And the third and final one is that, you know, with the U.S. stock rally being driven to a large extent by technology stocks, shares, the antitrust crackdown to limit the monopoly power of big tech companies may have significant impact on future increases in their share prices.
You mentioned about inflation. On Friday, core PCE, or personal consumption expenditure, rose 3.4% on year in May. But might that be enough to calm fears of inflation and a sudden tapering by the Fed?
I think for the moment, the Fed itself has believe that the current spike in the U.S. inflation is temporary and is likely to start to ease in the second half of the year. Of course, we are concerned that, you know, if that rise in inflation are, you know, becoming more permanent, then the U.S. Federal Reserve may be forced to act earlier than expected. But our belief or our expectation is that that inflation are likely to start to ease, you know, in the coming months, and we shall continue to monitor these indicators, inflation indicators, quite closely.
Bernard, on a related note, there is speculation that the Delta variant will delay the full reopening of Asian economies. How do you see this affecting the demand and price of oil as going forward?
So one of the main challenges economists face this year when forecasting economic growth is how new outbreaks can quickly derail our projections and assumptions. So how we think about the recovery here, which is quite relevant to the demand for oil and also the price of oil here in Coface, is that we assume there will be fresh outbreaks. And the game changer here is really about vaccination. And for many countries in Asia, reaching widespread immunity, which could now be as high as 80% of the population because of the new and more infectious variants, this is critical to build up the resiliency of the recovery. And I don't really see many Asian economies hitting that widespread immunity by end of this year. And as a result, you know, a full reopening of the economy by this year will not be on the cards for many in the region. And how this will affect the demand for oil, I think that a full return in demand for oil will be delayed because there are still mobility restrictions in many parts of Asia, and in some cases, stricter measures even because of a surge in local infections. So as for the price of oil, it depends on whether the group known as the OPEC Plus is proceeding with increasing oil production in July. So, you know, you want to see where supply is going over the next few months. And this would see oil prices retreat from recent highs if they do intend to go forward with increasing oil production after cutting production for most of last year. So we shall know more about this when the OPEC countries meet later this week on the 1st of July.
So Bernard, here in Asia, China is arguably the country furthest ahead in controlling the pandemic. And the PBOC has already started slowing credit growth in order to manage debt risks. Is this the right time to do so, though, or will growth be curtailed prematurely?
And the Chinese government is very much concerned about the sustainability of debt, as well as containing financial risk in the Chinese economy. And China, if you recall, is the only major economy to record positive GDP growth last year, about 2.3%. So expectations of further and faster growth this year provide the confidence that the authorities can continue to tighten credit growth. But of course, the challenge is always finding that sweet spot between the pace of credit tightening and maintaining healthy growth. Therefore, there is a risk of excessive credit tightening, which will undermine growth stability and possibly lead to unintended financial risks. But so far, the government has been taking a sector-specific approach to credit tightening, targeting the real estate sector in particular. And they have also continued to tighten the screws on the shadow banking industry. But overall, I see it as an ongoing balancing act for the Chinese government.
Following up from your answer, so on Thursday, the Chinese Communist Party celebrates its 100 years anniversary. What announcements might you be looking out from Xi Jinping about the economy?
I think the Chinese government has been telegraphed most of their plans over the past year or so. So I'm not expecting any new comments from the Chinese president themselves. It is still going to be focused on how they are shifting to a new development phase on the 100-year mark of the founding of the CCP. So they are still focusing more on the development strategy, which they announced last year, the dual circulation strategy, focusing on boosting domestic demand, which will include not just consumption, but also domestic investment, as well as a focus on developing what they call indigenous innovation, which is just getting innovation done from within China, rather than relying on external technology and innovation.
Now, Bernard, let's take a look at Malaysia before we wrap up here. Malaysia's inflation rate moderated in May, but there are concerns that further movement restrictions will push the price of essential goods and services up over the coming months. Overall, what are your thoughts on all this?
Well, if the MCO has shut down, I think all the sectors in the economy, then prices of essential goods and services will definitely be higher because of the disruption to the delivery of such goods and services and leading to supply shortages. But a complete shutdown did not happen. So sectors providing essential goods and services still allowed to operate, although with some capacity limits and shorter opening hours. So I think that prices for essential goods and services should remain stable in the coming months.
Bernard, thank you so much for joining us this morning. That was Bernard R, APAC economist at COFAS, talking to us about how global markets, as well as, of course, the price of essential goods here in Malaysia, is going to act over the coming weeks. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.